Hello and welcome to All in IT Radio. Join us as we talk about everything related to information technology and some other random stuff as well. Help us as we try to find how IT relates to each and every one of us and what the story headlines really mean. Welcome to All in IT Radio, episode 0002. We're back. My name is Kenneth.
And my name is Henrik.
And we are once again making the internet unsafe to move around in. Or actually, is it the other way around this time, perhaps?
Yeah.
We're trying to make the web a safer place to be. This day we will... or evening, whatever, morning perhaps, depends on when you're listening to it. This time, we do a bit of recap. We'll talk about some feedback we actually got regarding last show, and we'll talk about security with the Tor network, the Onion router. And what else?
And then I believe we will delve a bit into the recent Facebook blunder. And from that we will go and talk a bit about the Brick Nintendo campaign from Free Software Foundation. And I will finish up with a recent news article about how to speed up your Photoshop.
Interesting. So we talk about the news actually this time, and we cover some basics. One piece of feedback we got was to be more in-depth. And to be in-depth, you have to actually back up a bit and cover the basics first. So it's not that we try to declare some our listeners stupid or something like that. We just try to be thorough and actually cover all the bases. And then, well...
And then I believe that we actually think that our listeners are stupid. That you are free to cut out.
You said it, not I.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but still, the main reason to listen to us, that's because we are very funny, aren't we?
Or because people don't have anything better to do.
Oh, come on, we're funny. Say something funny, please. Say something funny.
Du kör ju I fel fil. Pom 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 pom.
Alright, that's a big pile of fail, my man. Still, those who got that, they thought it was funny. Alright, should we get this show on the road?
Yeah, let's get it started.
Let's go. So, since last week, we actually got some feedback.
We did?
Yeah, sure. We have... been receiving feedback for every episode so far. That is two episodes. It's a friend of ours. His name is Thor, actually. That's true. His name really is Thor. That's rather cool.
We live in Scandinavia.
Exactly. We live up here in the cold northern countries.
Where every man is named Thor.
Every other man, at least. And... well, he pronounced it Tor, but, well, same thing. Same spelling, at least.
Yeah.
He had some thoughts.
Okay.
What did we talk about last week?
I believe we talked very much about security, from what I remember. Backup solutions and password security solutions.
Right, true. And he mentioned in his email that he hadn't thought that much about password security. Okay. But he had actually thought quite a bit about backups.
All right.
And he used a couple of services that we didn't mention, so I thought we could mention them now. Let's see what he says. He says he has four backed up copies of his files, and he used a program called F-Backup, and the links will be in the show notes. And he backs up to an external USB drive, to a network-attached storage he has in the closet, which has two hard drives with RAID, and I guess that would be RAID 1, as we discussed last week. And he backs up to the cloud, he uses a service called LiveDrive at livedrive.com. And he says he pays $550 a month and he gets as much storage as he needs.
Well, okay, it's
sounds
nice.
Reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He has some comments about the service, though. It doesn't... It's not 100%, he says, but it's good enough. And did you notice how long it took him to upload all his files?
Yeah, what he's writing, 2 months.
It's wonderful. 2 months to back up all his files. But, well, what can you say? 255 gigabytes over the internet, that it has to take some time.
Mm. But I'm looking a bit into the F-backup service. And what I can see, it's only for Windows. Am I right?
All right. Okay, that might be so.
For Windows 7, Vista, XP, 2008, 2003, and 2000 server, it says.
All right.
And I'm not sure if it works over Wine.
Well, it might. But then again, it's interesting to see what it offers that is unique. There are quite a lot of backup programs that run in a Linux environment natively and works great.
Mm.
So if you want a program that is native to your system, whatever OS you use, there are alternatives.
Yeah.
But it's always an extra win if it's a cross-platform program.
Mm.
At least for those of us who jump from OS to OS.
Yeah, exactly.
But you might have a point there. It seems like LiveDrive is Windows and Mac only.
Yeah, looks so. PC and Mac, it says.
Interesting. But I might be wrong. And as you said, it might work if you use Wine.
But how good is it to use backup service programs over Wine?
I don't know, actually.
Something
but
just
you're
tells
right,
me. Yeah, I just get the thought that okay, running standard applications over Wine, no problem. But wouldn't it be some kind of problem or trickiness with backing up over Wine or VirtualBox?
Well, I guess the problem would be that all file access would go through Wine.
Mm.
And if you have a backup solution, you would really want that to be as fast and as quick as possible.
Yeah.
And then it should... Well, I guess be native, preferably.
Mm. What alternatives do we talk about last week in terms of backup services? We said Dropbox at least, but you talked about something else, I believe.
Yeah, well, we mentioned Dropbox, and then I talked quite a bit about CrashPlan.
Yeah, that was
CrashPlan.com. And there are, I think I mentioned quite a lot of different services, but I haven't used them.
Mm. But CrashPlan was cross-platform, or was it?
It's cross-platform, yes. And as with the service that Tor mentions, there are no limitation on how much you can store there. But it's a bit more expensive, I believe.
Mm.
But then again, CrashPlan can be used on a server. That is,
yeah, okay.
A computer that doesn't have a graphical interface installed.
Mm. Mm.
And that is a great plus, I think.
Yeah, there are lots of backup services out there, but I believe a lot of them must be, if I say it differently, the quality of these backup services must vary quite a bit.
Oh, well, true. And the only way to find out is to try it.
Mm.
And if you don't have that amount of money that you can actually spend it on trying out different backup plans, well, try to Google it. Try to find what other people say about it.
Or listen to these podcasts.
Oh, of course.
Nice.
Exactly. Ka-ching. All right. We have actually a mutual friend. Not Tor. Another friend.
Mm-hmm.
Who offers backup solutions.
Yeah, indeed. We have.
But he does it kind of the hardcore way, if you will. He either installs a local server or he installs on a local server, if there already is one there in the company.
Mm.
And then he backs up from that. So, well, it's not cheap. It's not for the home user, I would say.
No.
And the great thing about that is you get a very niche solution. You get something that's tailored for your needs or for the company's needs.
Yeah.
And that is great, of course. If that's what you need, that's what you should get.
Mm-hmm.
Right, well, speaking about Tor, I had a little news bit about Tor. Do you know what Tor is? The onion router?
I've heard the name here and there, but I don't really have any idea of what it is about. So tell me.
All right. Well, we shan't delve into it too deeply, because I don't, well, really get all the details. But the thing is, you don't always want to be recognized on the internet.
No.
You might be at work, and you might have some sort of router that is destroying your life, and the firewall is filtering everything you try to do.
Yeah.
And your boss is sitting there watching every little internet request you do. Or you might be in a country where, well, free speech isn't quite as high on the agenda. And to find out what's actually happening in the world, you have to go undercover. And that's where Tor comes in.
Okay.
It's a network. It's a network of servers, and anyone can set up a server. You, me, doesn't matter. And they will connect to this network. So, for example, if I want to go through the Tor network and access the web,
yeah,
I tell it to access the web through, let's say, 6 nodes. And that means that my Tor client, because it's something I install on my computer, which I then point my web browser to so I can surf the web or whatever I want to do.
Yeah.
It then gets the public keys for each and every one of the nodes it will pass through.
Okay.
And encrypts it, the data, with them each and every one in sequence. So when your request reaches the first node, the one closest to you, it can open the encryption with its private key. But then, underneath that layer, there's something else that it can't read, since it's encrypted with the next node's public key. So it sends it there.
Yeah.
Because in each layer, there is something that tells it to send it along to the next node. And that is, well, random and unpredictable. So it just moves on in this way. And finally, it reaches the internet, where the last layer of the onion of encryption is peeled off. Your request reaches the light of day again and is sent on to whatever web page you wanted to get. And then it's the same way on the way back again.
So in short terms, it is a program that when you want to go to an internet website or something like that, it takes a lot of detours before it actually reaches that server. And when the data is going back to you, it takes a lot of detours before it gets to you. Am I right?
Exactly.
Right.
To make sure that you are anonymous when you surf the web.
Mm.
Or if you use SSH, or if you use, well, I was about to say voice over IP, but to use voice over IP or a SIP client or Skype or anything like that through Tor, not a good idea.
Okay, why?
It's slow.
Ah,
it's
okay.
It's dog slow.
Yeah. Right.
So, Tor isn't that great a thing even when you want to surf the web, actually. It's to be used when you have to use it, but not otherwise. It's not something you install and forget you have, since it's, well, it really affects your upload and download speed.
Mm.
But for something like email or something like instant messaging, where the speed isn't that important, if it takes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds more, it doesn't really matter. I mean, would you notice if an email you send to me is delayed 4, 5 seconds, 10 seconds?
I don't think so.
No, probably not.
But if we take an example then from the real world, I've had a lot of trouble for the last months at my school with browsing the web and using different applications through, well, Firefox Portable, as I use. The other alternative is Internet Explorer 7.
Ugh.
And a lot of websites I try to reach, I'm met by the standard port 443 block error message. It can't download the certificates and such things. Would Tor, for example, solve this problem?
Yes, it should. The reason that you can't reach every page and the reason that you can't, well, make all the certificates work is that the firewall at your school is stopping all traffic that it deems not appropriate. And with a Tor client, that's not a problem. It gets tunneled through the firewall and reaches the internet. But then again, that's not really the idea with Tor. There are better services if you just want to avoid a school or company firewall. There are services that doesn't anonymize you in this way. It just gives you a way to peek a hole in the firewall, so to speak.
Yeah, so the Tor thing is about being as anonymous as you can be.
And in your case, I would say it's a bit overkill, actually.
Yeah, okay.
But if you install a server and if you want to make, well, let's say you have your own email server or something like that, why not use Tor? There's no reason not to. But actually, the reason that I brought up Tor was that they have introduced something new.
Okay.
I don't know how new it is, but it's a few weeks, I think.
Yeah.
They have actually, well, you might say that they have forked the Firefox web browser. And that is, they have taken the source code and made their own version of it.
So Tor made its own version of Firefox?
True, exactly.
But why?
Because one of the hardest things when you wanted to use Tor was actually setting it up correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, you had to install plugins and other stuff to get it to work. So, well, all right. They took it all, installed it, and are now offering it as a download on their webpage. It's the Tor Browser Bundle, they call it. And you can download it, install it on a USB drive, and run it from there. And you will have everything configured and ready to go.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
It is nice.
Almost worth testing out.
Sure. Do that. Test it at your school and see if it works. I'll be very interesting to hear how it fares. And they have a combined bundle as well. It's the browser bundle and Tor IM browser bundle. That is instant messaging. So they have also forked, so to speak, the Pigeon project.
Ooh, nice.
So that it as well runs through the Tor network.
Yeah.
And, well, there are a few things to notice when you run it, but it's all explained on the webpage torproject.org, and the link will be in the show notes.
But I must say, I'm a bit disappointed that they named the browser Tor Browser Bundle.
All right, why?
Fire Tor sounds much cooler.
Fire Tor. All right. Fair enough. Well, they have means to get in touch with them, so you might as well suggest it. So, what's next on the agenda?
Well, now when we started talking about security and anonymous issues, I read something on the Symantec blog about the Facebook applications. This has been talked about in the media the last months, I believe, off and on. But now they are specifically talking about third-party users, for example, advertisers on Facebook. The thing is that they have, by accident, got access to user accounts, private user accounts on Facebook, and the data that belongs to these, such as photographs, chat logs, and other stuff. The private stuff, and that is the big issue.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
We live in such a secure world, don't you believe that?
And I mean, when will people understand that Facebook is one of the worst places to be? Oh man. It's a rather interesting bug, actually, that led to these third parties getting a hold of this information.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you even can call it a bug. It's an error in design, rather. When you surf the web, your browser sends along in the headers the last page you were at.
Yeah.
That is, which page am I coming from when I now arrive?
Yeah, exactly.
At the new page. And that was the thing, since Facebook used URLs, that is, web addresses with some long random access token of some sort.
Yeah.
To authenticate these third-party apps, that is, everything actually that gets access to your Facebook account. That could be an app in your mobile phone, it could be a web page. There was one service I heard about that kept an eye on another person's social status.
Okay.
So that when he or she became single, they got immediately a mail telling them that, well, there's someone else interested in you.
And that's nice.
It was very popular.
Yeah, I can see that.
And services like that.
Yeah.
And when they got, when you gave them access to your Facebook account, which you do, they get, well, you can look at it as a spare set of keys. That's what the semantic blog called it.
Okay.
They get a URL which they can use and access as a key all the things in your account that you have agreed to that they should have access to. But the thing is, when these services either visits other web pages or when commercials that are linked and are shown on the same web pages in Facebook or elsewhere, well, these access tokens, these URLs, they get logged in web servers all over the web. So if you look in your logs, if you have some sort of advertisement service or something like that, you find a lot of Facebook login keys. And the thing about these is that they don't expire ever.
Oh, and that is even worse.
And this has been going on since 2006.
Ooh. 5-year anniversary.
Exactly. So that means that there are web servers out there that are filled with access keys to a lot of Facebook accounts. And, well, now hackers and crackers know it. They can get into these web servers if they don't have them themselves, and they can use them. And do you know what they use such an access key for? What do they do with your account? Can you guess?
I was going to say mostly forwarding spam, because that's most of the cases, I believe, but...
Sure.
Probably not, as you say.
No. Of course, that's part of it. That's
because
interesting.
Because as I've tried to... When I talk about these subjects with my relatives, I try to explain to them why they should think about their password security, so, for example, on the internet. It's not because your mail or your identity is so valuable. It's because any real identity is valuable. The people who wants to crack or get an email account hacked is more or less happy with anyone's email account. And it doesn't really depend on who it is, if they're not after something specific in the accounts. But most of the cases, they are just out to get as many accounts as possible. Because fake accounts sooner or later are discovered easier than real accounts.
True. Of course, you have a point there. But there's also something else to consider.
Okay.
And that's... What does it take today to crack the security of your web browser?
Not much.
If you visit a specifically designed web page, they can get into your computer.
But this must mean, when we talked about the encryption streams that are in the URLs, this must mean that the sensitive Facebook data is also stored in the web browser history?
No, actually, I don't think so. It's just the keys that are stored there. And as far as I know, that's the only thing that these third-party apps uses to authenticate themselves. The information that flows between them and Facebook should be encrypted, as far as I know. I hope
but the step from using the key to get access to the data isn't that far, am I right?
No, of course not. And if you get get your hands on one of these keys, you can access the data, and almost certainly you can post things on that person's wall.
Mm.
And what do you post? Well, of course, here's a very funny picture of me at the company picnic.
Mm.
And what do your friends do? Well, they click on this to watch you in a funny picture, and they get infected with a worm or a Trojan or something else that sits in their computer and sooner or later takes it over when it needs it for some form of attack or something like that. So this is a perfect way to get access right into people's computers. And it's a really easy way to get access to people's computers. So there are not many solutions to this, unfortunately. It isn't a problem anymore, because Facebook has switched to something called OAuth 2.0 when it authenticates third-party apps.
Okay.
And this is a more secure way of making sure that they are authenticated. And Facebook has themselves answered this accusation from Symantec and said that, well, it's not such a big problem actually, because everyone who does commercials on Facebook and such, they have signed a contract that says that they aren't allowed to gather information about our... I mean, you can hear right away, it's just a load of crap.
Mm.
So they don't take it seriously, but they have actually fixed this. So it isn't anymore a problem. But all these spare keys are stored on servers all over the internet. And either you go into your account and you deactivate all third-party applications that you have authorized.
Yeah.
That means everything. And, well, that's probably quite a few.
In most cases, yeah.
The other solution is to change your password.
Yeah. And then the lazy, stereotypical user think, what is hard? What is most hard? Change password or erase all applications?
Or just ignore it and, well, it won't happen to me.
Yeah.
So, well, of course, you should take this opportunity to change your password. If you don't leave Facebook altogether, which I would recommend, change your password and use FirstPass or KeyPass or LastPass or something like that. And as we talked about last episode, in the last show, we gave you quite a few tips how to get your passwords in a better or more fit state.
Yeah.
So have a listen to that and really think about your online security, but at least change your password, please.
What's next up?
Well, I caught a little message earlier today on Twitter, and it was a man called Ryan Paul. He is an open source editor at the online magazine or news source Ars Technica, which I recommend, by the way. Great place to find interesting articles. And he wrote about an organization called the Free Software Foundation.
Yeah.
Do you know what they do?
No. Well, obviously I've heard the name, and yeah, Free Software Foundation. That gives me sort of a clue. But I don't think I really know specifically anything they do more than promote and support free software development.
Yeah, well, true. The Free Software Foundation... Well, the problem with the Free Software Foundation is that they do regularly a few commercials or campaigns. And these campaigns are... Well, they are rarely any good. They are actually quite bad.
Okay.
Well, some of them are all right. They had one called End Software Patents.
Mm.
They had another called Defective by Design, and that's rather interesting. They talk about DRM, Digital Rights Management, or as they like to call it, Digital Restrictions Management, which, well, they have a point.
Yeah.
That if you try to lock down content, you are actually hurting those who try to...
Simply use it,
exactly. Mm. And they talked about the Windows 7 sins when Windows 7 was about to get launched.
Mm.
And they talk a lot about, well, freedom other than just plain software, but specifically from DRM and other such things. They had one campaign called Play Og.
Okay.
I like that one. That it's one of the few positive campaigns they actually had. And that's a good campaign. They try to make people aware of the Og format, which is quite a lot better than MP3. And it's a newer format, and it's a free format, which means that an Og player should theoretically be cheaper than an MP3 player.
Yeah.
Since they don't have to pay a license for supporting the file format.
Are there currently any Og players for sale on the market?
Oh, certainly.
Okay.
There are. There was, let's see if I remember, was it iRiver? I believe actually our friend Tor had one of those.
I know many, not many, but a few players who support MP3 and Og and Wave and MP4A and all these obscure formats. But is there any niched or targeted Og player only?
Oh, right. Well, I don't know.
That just scrapped the MP3 support.
The thing is, the reason that, well, let's say, for example, any car won't have support for the Og format is that the chip which decodes the MP3 format is produced in such high quantity, I don't even know if they make Og chips.
Okay.
It's a small integrated chip which is rather cheap to buy and implement, even though you have to pay a license for it. So, well, all right. It's sad, but that's the case. So if you can use Org, do it, of course. But
aren't we derailing a bit here? You were talking something about the Free Software Foundation.
We are. Right, we were talking about the Free Software Foundation. And as I said, they do, well, a few good things, but their campaigns are mostly bad. And they have a new campaign.
Bad in terms of that they are doing their campaigns wrong, or that they only focus on negative aspects of bad things in the IT society.
Exactly, the latter of those two. They focus only on the negative. They don't encourage the positive.
Oh, okay.
Enough.
Yeah.
Well, that's my take on it, at least.
Mm.
Their latest campaign is called Brick Nintendo Before They Brick You.
Mm.
And this is hard to read for an old Nintendo fanboy like me.
Mm.
I have to admit it. But they specifically target the handheld Nintendo 3DS.
Okay.
And they talk about all the things that Nintendo does and what they actually make you agree to when you accept the terms of service for the device.
Yeah.
And there are quite a few things. Let's see. They say that Nintendo reserves the right to connect to your device and do a firmware update without notifying you. And that's, well, okay, that's a bit creepy, but sure, they can update the hardware.
Mm.
But such a firmware update can brick the device. That is, make it unusable. You can't start it anymore.
Okay.
And their terms of service says that if you use the device with any unauthorized modifications, that is, accessories, softwares, like games, if you try any way to, and that's the key issue here, that's what they're after, if you try any pirated games,
yeah,
they will brick your machine.
Okay.
But, and sure, all right, that's not a nice thing, and that's a thing that we have, that's a problem that comes again with iPhones and Android phones. When something in the Android market or in the iPhone app store turns out to be harmful for your device, well, they have the power to retract it.
Yeah.
And this, when someone else, a company, reaches into your device, into your computer, into your phone, into your play device, doesn't matter where it is, and does something with it without your knowledge and without your approval, well, it's a bit creepy. And some would say that it's, well, it's not fair.
Yeah.
So that's the main issue. But then they actually found a few other things in the terms of service. And that is that Nintendo claims a copyright license to any pictures or photos. That's the same thing. Any photos or videos that you take with a 3DS.
Okay. That's quite absurd if you think about it.
It is, isn't
it? It's like if you... when I bought my DSLR camera from Nikon, it's like every time I take a picture with it, I have to send it to them and ask them if I can buy out the rights for the picture. If you think about it, if a device has a camera which you should are going to use for some sort of creative or informative works, if it in the terms of service says that the company who produced the camera should have all the copyright for the things you do with it.
And this is interesting, when you put it like that. I mean, this has been standard in the software industry, more or less.
Yeah.
You don't buy software from Microsoft. You pay a fee to use it under certain circumstances as long as they think it's all right for you to keep using it. I mean, there are all these legal clauses and paragraphs that just, well, you don't have any rights anymore, more or less. And it feels like this is, well, it's already reached the web. And, I mean, Facebook does similar things. Everything you put up on Facebook is theirs to use as they see fit, more or less. And now it seems to seep into the hardware we use. I mean, I would be surprised if the iPhone doesn't have something like this.
Before we know it, it's going to say in the terms of service that the company who produced the device can, if they find fit, modify or change the hardware in your device without your knowledge. I.e. they break into your home, they change the microprocessor, they steal the hard drive, and it's all right. You don't have to worry about it.
And you agreed to it when you clicked OK on the terms of service. And who reads those anyway?
But yeah, that, when you think about it, it's really important, actually, to at least take a quick look at every new terms of service agreement you're going to agree to. I mean, if you know the company behind it, if you know the product from earlier, like when you install a new subversion of Firefox or anything like that, most of the terms of service are exactly the same as always. But from time to time, and when you buy or install or modify new products, I think it's best to just quickly wrap up what's in the terms of service agreements. Because in the end, it's you who is responsible for it. It's you who agree to it. Even if the terms are absurd, and in many ways, most of them are, it's still more or less your fault for agreeing to it.
But we must perhaps make it clear that neither Facebook nor Nintendo gets the copyright or the rights as author to the pictures you take, or if you post it on your wall or whatever you do. They, in their terms of service, in their EULAs, they grant themselves an eternal right to use your pictures however they see fit. So it's not, you never lose your right as the person who created it in the first place. But furthermore, the Free Software Foundation points out that in the notes that accompany the 3DS, Nintendo makes it clear that it's the parents' responsibility to carefully watch their children using it and make sure they don't enter any personal information. That is, they shouldn't take pictures, videos, type their name to friends they are chatting with, etc. And they give the parents the option to turn off wireless, but still, the 3DS will collect all the data it can, and any chance it gets, it will phone home to the mothership and transmit all the information that it's gathered.
But that's,
so it's a bit creepy, actually.
Yeah, but that's really, again, absurd. If you look at the 3DS, it has a camera on the inside for you to use as a webcam, I believe. I don't know. It looks like it. If you then aren't going to use it to take personal, as it going to it's going to be, pictures of your face or something like that, why do you put a camera there? And why do you write those things in the Terms of Service Agreement? It's like putting all these nifty hardware and stuff into a piece of device, and then you transform the uses of these things into a complete basket case by saying they can't use these things, more or
less. But that's the thing. Everyone wants to use the item, so they buy it and they don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that important to many people.
No, but once again, I understand that the companies don't want to be sued over every minor little dumb thing that the users can do by breaking the device or whatever. In US, at least, people are pretty skilled at suing each other now, every now and then. But
so they try to cover their own behind.
Yeah, exactly.
Their own backside, of course.
But in this case, as we described with the 3DS, it's gone a little bit too far, and most terms of service agreements these days are the same. They are now infringing? Yeah, exactly. On the user's rights to use the services, if you so say.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not quite sure where all of this will end up, but it's definitely interesting. Mm. I wasn't sure. I'm a Nintendo fanboy, born and bred, but I haven't bought any of their mobile devices for quite some time. I have the original Game Boy, the old... Yeah. That looked like a brick, actually.
Indeed.
So but that's about it.
Mm.
So I'm not in the market to get this one either. And, well, I have to admit, after reading this, I don't really want to.
Well, now I believe we have talked about tragical things for at least 1 hour soon.
It has been quite a depressing show, hasn't it?
First, we talked about, what was it? Being anonymous while browsing. Then it was the Facebook blunder, and then it was the Nintendo facepalm.
Oh, that's just sad. But, well, what can you say? That's the way the news stories fall sometimes.
Mm.
All right, do you have anything positive? Can we end this show on a positive note?
Well, I have to give it a go, I believe. I found something a few hours ago about Photoshop. That's something most of the people these days use, or something similar. Basically, what the news was about is that when you work with large files in Photoshop and try to save them, this will take quite some time if you sit on a, well, it's standard computer these days, I believe. And what they are suggesting in this article is a way to speed up the way Photoshop save its files when you're working with them. And what they are suggesting is that most computers these days have hard drives of a hard drive space of about 1 terabyte. It's common these days. So they're suggesting that you can turn off the compression of the files if you have a fast and large hard drive. They say that it's a benefit if you turn off the compression if you have a fast and large hard drive, and if it is the processor who is the source of the long save time and not the hard drive. And this difference can be up to about 20 times faster. I haven't tried this myself, but I'm eager to try it out later.
With a program like Photoshop, you actually count the seconds regardless of what operations you're trying to do, since it tends to, well, be a bit slow.
They say the Mac Performance Guide page, they made a test by using this technique, and they had a really large image file that they tried to save, and originally the save time was 119 seconds, and they got this down to 18 seconds. So I believe that's a humongous improvement.
That's really impressive.
But as I say, the file size are increased. In this example, it increased from 1.82 gigabyte to 2.88 gigabyte. So not double that, but not that far from it, from 2 gigabyte to 3 gigabyte.
So you really have to have quite an extensive hard drive for this to be a gain for you. But then again, of course, time is money.
Yeah, and these days, big hard drives isn't a problem.
True.
A 500 gigabyte standard hard drive doesn't cost more than about $50 or something, I believe. So it isn't that big problem. And as SSD drives getting faster and larger...
And cheaper.
Yeah, exactly, and cheaper. I believe it won't be long before we can see fast and large hard drives in the near future. And then I believe it will be a much more pleasant experience to work with programs like Photoshop.
Not to dampen your enthusiasm here, but if we can learn anything from the way computers have evolved, it's that when there's more capacity in any way, the software people will find a way to, well, make it dog slow again.
Yeah, I know.
But that's the price of progress.
Exactly, but I just try to be a tad optimistic, as we
well,
have been so depressing during this whole show.
With this tip, you actually save time, and what is more precious than time? Alright, should we round this up?
Yeah, we probably should.
So it's been a security-focused show today as well, that's interesting.
Mm.
And some philosophical discussion around what rights the manufacturer of a device you buy has. But, well, alright. Still, it was a good show.
Yeah.
So, where can people reach us? Where can people reach you?
Well, they can reach me on Twitter, most easily, I believe. And my handle there is @warpfuzz. That is spelled WARPFUZ. And they can use the common hashtag if they want to reach both of us with tips for the next show by using the hashtag AIITR. That's All in IT Radio. And where can they reach you?
I have a Twitter account as well. You have @altinomit. That's All in IT in Swedish. ALLTINOMIT. And of course, you are welcome to mail us at show@AIIT.se.
Mm-hmm.
And since a couple of days ago, we have our own group on Identica, which is called AIITR, I believe.
So what you just said is that it will be about 20 blank spaces from AIIT to R.
True that.
Mm.
I will put a link in the show notes to clarify this whole thing. And I don't think you will have any problem reaching us.
No.
Anything more you want to plug?
Nah, I just thought about that every time we have to spell out our Twitter handles, it's like we don't want people to reach us.
Well, all the good names are taken.
But then, of course, they can read the release notes and just click there. Much easier.
Of course. And our mail address, that's not hard.
No.
show@aiit.se.
Hmm. Sure, nice.
That's easy to remember. And I almost forgot our theme music, of course. It was a song called Musical by an artist named Braylet Frank. Braylet Frank? I don't know. I haven't got a clue how to pronounce that. Anyway, it's released under a Creative Commons by SA 3.0 license. You'll find it at Jamendo, and I'll put a link in the show note. Alright, well, then, thank you for this time, and we'll see each other again soon.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.